Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to have a very special conversation at the beginning of this program with a man that I've come to admire tremendously, a fellow who is brilliant, yes, and articulate, yes, and courageous, yes, but also who has by firsthand knowledge an appreciation of that enemy within peace in particular, but also more generally, the enemies without who are working with those within to take down our country. His name is Dr. Michael Rechtenwald. He is a former professor at New York University and a former Marxist, no less. He has come a long way, baby, as we're fond of saying, and he has become, I think, one of our most important resources on these matters of the Communist Party of China, particularly, and the Marxist agenda, the cultural revolution, and so on, that it is wielding against us. And who is helping it as well? He is these days the chief academic officer and co-founder of an important new group, American Scholars, which is a pro-American educational platform. What a concept. Michael Rechtenwald, welcome. It is good to have you back. We have missed you for too long, and I can't tell you how excited I am that you're with us once again.
Thanks for having me, Frank. Good to be here.
I'm going to set the stage for this conversation by announcing something that I hope our audience will be as excited about as I am. As we speak, in the course of the day, we will be having a press conference on Capitol Hill featuring Senator Ron Johnson, I think the best United States senator at the moment from the state of Wisconsin, and Bob Good, the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, one of the most important members of that body, and a number of other members of Congress, and I think six or seven of the conservative movement's leaders to come together to mount and announce, really, that we are launching a campaign, an emergency campaign, to stop the surrender of American sovereignty to the World Health Organization that the Biden administration is trying to perpetrate secretively 47 days from today. Our purpose is going to be to try to ensure that that doesn't happen in the next 47 days or so, and more to the point that if indeed the president succeeds in getting through the World Health Assembly, as it's called, at the end of May, beginning of June, not one, but two treaties that would have the effect, I believe, of destroying our constitutional republic in favor of something that the admirers of these treaties call global governance. That's not the same thing as limited, accountable, representative, constitutional government by a country mile. And we'll talk about that more with our guest, Michael Rechtenwald, in a moment. But I just wanted to say, we need your help, folks. This is a moment when all hands must be on deck to protect that country we love, as I say in my open, and against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's an oath of office that I took a long time ago, and every single member of the Biden administration has also taken. And yet they are in the midst of now, some very directly, some simply by association, trying to perpetrate one of the greatest attacks on our Constitution and our sovereignty and our personal freedoms, as well as states' rights, in the history of our republic. We are intent on stopping that, folks. We need your help. At centerforsecuritypolicy.org, you'll see in the Take Action section on our homepage a link that'll take you to the sovereigntycoalition.org. And once you're there, we have a brand new Align Act campaign that I urge you to sign on to. It's called the Not Now campaign. And that simply means to the President of the United States, don't even think about trying to perpetrate this, well, fraud, but this, you know, toxic fraud at that, just 47 days from now. And secondly, that we insist that the United States Senate advise and, if it chooses to, consent to anything that comes out of this process, something that is not in the offing as things stand now. So we need to hold these people accountable. Go to that site, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, and on to thesovereigntycoalition.org. You will be able, with that Align Act, to communicate directly to your elected representatives, starting with the president, about this dangerous folly and why it must not be allowed to happen. Not now, and I would say, for that matter, not never. Michael Rechtenwald, I'm so anxious to talk with you about all of this because, as I say, you've been in the belly of the beast. Talk to us about what the Chinese Communist Party and Tedros Ghebreyesus at the World Health Organization and the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum, all these guys mean when they tell us global governance is in our future.
Yeah, I mean, so the United Nations has been pushing a global governance agenda for decades, and this has been part of their agenda, and it's being driven through the WHO at this juncture, and it's also being driven through the World Economic Forum, and effectively what they're trying to do is drive it into the legislative processes of all nations. And in the case of the United States, it's not legislative, it's really executive orders. And so they're doing it by fiat here. And the ambition is, the pretense is always that there's a global crisis. And so global crisis, they suggest, can only be addressed by global governance. And that's why they have always used the global crises to usher in this global governance, because this gives them a perfect excuse.
And so, right. And can I just ask you on that? It seems as though, and you've been a student of these political agendas and ideologies of the authoritarian kind, especially. Am I right that health or public safety are often the leading edge of that kind of insertion of tyranny through global or otherwise governing schemes?
Health and the environment have been the major two. So these are the two prongs that they're using right now. And I think it'll be volleyed back and forth between the two. And they'll use either one or both in order to continue to usher in this global governance agenda.
Right. You've actually written recently an important book on this very subject entitled The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, yes. Unraveling the Global Agenda. And Michael, I personally am of the view that much of this has to do with the ambitions of the Chinese Communist Party to achieve global governance or a global agenda with, as Xi Jinping likes to call it, Chinese characteristics.
Yeah.
How significant is the role of the CCP in this, do you think? 30 seconds.
Well, I think the CCP has global ambitions, but so do these Western elites at the UN and so forth. So I think the Western elites believe that they can use China's global governance ambitions to their ends. And I think that's really what's going on.
I think it works the other way around, too. The Chinese, yes, think they'll be able to exploit the globalists. We have to take a very short break. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, the author of The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
The Western Pacific will get some welcome attention today, with the Japanese Prime Minister making an address to a joint session of Congress and summoning with President Biden and their Filipino counterpart. Unfortunately, the needed display of allied solidarity and resolve in countering the Chinese Communist Party's intensifying aggression throughout the region has just been undercut by Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's latest appeasement tourism in Beijing. That's a seriously fraught message to be sending, even as the CCP's forces are routinely assaulting Philippine vessels and penetrating Japanese airspace and waters, as they are those of a fourth strategically critical but uninvited regional partner, Taiwan. At a time when Team Biden is actively betraying its most important ally in the Mideast, Israel, there is no room for signaling that America is determined to undermine any others by engaging with the CCP. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, one of the most interesting men I have had the privilege of getting to know, not least because of his profound insights into the ideology that he has now broken with, and recognizes fully the danger that it represents. That would be Marxism, Maoism, and other flavors of the disease. I think it would be included as well, of course. Michael Rechtenwald is not only the author of The Great Reset and The Struggle for Liberty, but he's got, I think, 11 or 12 other books, each and every one of which is important for us, Beyond Woke, the Gulag Archipelago. Sorry, let me do that again. Pardon me. I'm looking at your website, and I'm not doing a good job of that. Just take it from the top, if you would. Welcome back, and we're visiting with one of the most interesting men I have had the privilege of getting to know. His name is Dr. Michael Rechtenwald. He has come in from the cold, I think one might say, having formerly been a Marxist professor at NYU, and is now one of the leading critics of that ideology and the menace that it poses to all of us, among others, including their partners among the globalist elite. He is the author, as I've mentioned, of The Great Reset and the Struggle for Liberty, Beyond Woke, The Google Archipelago, Thought Criminal, and a particularly relevant one that has to do with the, sorry, I've lost it here, rats. And a particularly relevant one, The Digital Gulag and the Simulation of Freedom. Michael, thank you so much for your time today. And I did want to pick up on this idea of the digital gulag, because in addition to this scheme whereby, pursuant to these two treaties, and they are treaties, by the way, folks, the World Health Organization's Director General will be essentially become the dictator of public health policy worldwide. Anything he decides is a public health emergency, he can declare as such, and he will be able to tell member nations of the World Health Organization what they have to do about it. That's a level of tyranny that I think we've never seen in the world to this point. And amazingly, it's being achieved without the force of arms. You know, people are just voluntarily surrendering, again, in the spirit of, oh, we have to do something about the possibility of a pandemic or something else like it. But I wanted to ask you, Michael, because one of the things that will be baked into this new arrangement is a digital ID for every man, woman, and child, if they have their way. And mechanisms, including censorship, that will be used to enforce adherence to the party line coming out of the WHO. Talk to us about this new digital gulag and how dangerous you think that would be.
Sure. So the digital identity is a real misnomer in a way. It's not really an identification card or some sort of digital identification. It really is a database, a complete database on each and every person, inclusive of vaccine status and what have you, from cradle to grave. And this is going to be necessary to interface with numbers of things, including, God forbid, the central bank digital currency and other types of mechanisms that they have in mind. And the idea here with the digital identity is that then they could basically track and trace your every move. And now there's also talk, by the way, of including a metaverse identity in that, so that all of your expression on the internet will be included. And then with the European Union's Digital Services Act, this is going to be ushered in such that even companies operating out of the United States will likely have to follow the European Union and the EC's digital requirements in order to continue publishing, because they're effectively going to make it impossible by fining and otherwise punitively addressing social media companies and so forth for any so-called disinformation. So this is an information lock that is being rolled out.
Yeah. And Michael, what's so important about this is somebody might say, well, there he goes again. He's off on a toot, hallucinating about all these horribles. But you're describing, I think, basically, the Chinese Communist Party's social credit system.
Yes.
And that's in place. That's operating today. And again, I come back to their influence on this whole exercise to just say, I don't think we're making this up. This is a very realistic forecast of what's coming, no?
Yes. They've been pushing digital identity for, you know, a decade now, at least. The UN, the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, you know, all these globalist organizations, European Union, these international intergovernmental agencies and like the UN and so forth, all of these agencies and have been pushing digital identity as a way to get a complete database on every person and then to use that database as a way of controlling their behavior, really, when it comes down to it, whether they can purchase certain things, whether they can consume gasoline, eat meat, and you name it. This will all be tied. Yeah, it'll all be tied to. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. And so, Michael, what you've just described, again, is something that, if God forbid, it's got added as another layer of the digital gulag, a central bank digital currency.
Right.
I mean, the lockdowns you're talking about are not just, you know, metaphysical. They are very real. And we saw that again with the Chinese Communist Party's lockdowns in the pandemic. No?
Yeah, the Chinese Communist Party's whole repertoire is really the model, I think, that the West is using.
They call it the China model.
Yes.
In fact, especially in COVID-19. Go ahead,
yes,
sorry.
It's the model for rolling out across the West. China is not necessarily the impetus behind this, but actually a participant. I think in many cases a willing participant, and they would like to see their model rolled out across the world. That's the fact. Because once they get their model rolled out, then their campaigns of propaganda and their lock on the Western world really becomes almost complete.
Yeah. Well, especially when you realize that they already have something on the order of 147 countries that are a little bit pregnant, at least, as they say, with their Belt and Road Initiative.
Absolutely.
And that's not going to end well.
Right.
But you're saying that the rest of the world will find itself in their crosshairs, too. I must say, I think you're being a little charitable by suggesting that they just like to have it come about, but actually doing everything they can to make sure that it does.
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to make it come about. But they're doing it with the... with the aid, the accomplices.
100%.
Yeah.
They're friends, as they call them. Old friends included.
Birds of a feather.
Yeah. And Joe Biden is right at the top of that list, I'm afraid. In fact, as you know, I think, Michael, one of our colleagues, Sam Faddis, has drawn on his experience recruiting and running agents for the United States and his job at the Central Intelligence Agency. He says Joe Biden is a controlled asset. of the Chinese Communist Party, and you look at what he's doing here, again by stealth, to foist this arrangement on us. It's just unbelievable. So, just in a closing minute, what should we be doing instead of going down this road, mostly blissfully ignorant that it's even that we're even on the road of global governance?
Well, we need to, I think the effect is we need sovereignty at every level that we can imagine. So sovereignty all the way down is really the answer.
Personal sovereignty.
Yeah, sovereignty at the national level, the state level, the local level, and ultimately at the individual level. And how do we get that? We can do that through, I think, decentralization and, you know, getting back to the foundations of this country, which was not as a national hegemon with one central government dictating everything. So they have to drive this.
Let alone a foreign one. That's as I recall, correct. That was the point of the whole revolution, wasn't it?
Exactly. Let alone a foreign one. So decentralization is the key in my view.
I couldn't agree with him more. Dr. Michael Recknewald, thank you. Let me just say in closing, folks, as I did at the beginning, check out the press conference that we will be doing in the course of the day today. It'll be, you know, immortalized on video at sovereigntycoalition.org, among other places. And please sign on to the Align Act campaign there. Let the president know, not now, do not go in the direction of this global governance and creating a new health-based global dictator. That's not on. We must not settle for it. Find out how you can help at sovereigntycoalition.org, as well as Door to Freedom, Dr. Merrill Nass's excellent resource. God bless you, doctor. Come back to us soon, and we'll be right back with more right after this.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to a man I consider both to be a mentor as well as a deep and profoundly important thinker and practitioner of the Christian faith. He is a friend and a colleague as well of now many years. His name is Reverend Kevin Jessup. He is the president of Return International and also Global Strategic Alliance, very impactful organization, working in lots of nations around the world, including Israel, as well as, of course, the United States. He is a guy that we're always appreciative of having the chance to visit with about the state of, well, among other things, spiritual warfare we are confronting. And Kevin, it's good to have you back, sir. Welcome once again.
Frank, it's always great to be with you. Bless you, especially for all that you're doing.
Well, and thank you for you. And your work, my son, my friend. Let me start by asking you to sort of level set with us. We've been witnessing this 6 months now of pretty much open warfare in Gaza, precipitated by an attack on Israel by Hamas, and the absolutely rapacious murder of 1,200 or so Israelis in its course. Could you put this into the context, as you see it, of spiritual warfare? Is that what we're really watching play out here?
Well, we are. We're watching, according to Ephesians 6:12, it says this. It says, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, and against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places." So we're talking about dark forces. We're talking about principalities. A principality is something that rules over a city or region. And so we see in the history of Israel, for example, we saw, several kingdoms, whether it was Egypt, Assyria, Media, Persia, Greece, Rome, Babylon, etc. They were all nations who were controlled by principalities. And those principalities could have been tolerance, it could have been secular humanism, it could have been abominable laws. And really what we're seeing today is all of those nations or empires that came against Israel with their controlling dark principalities are all alive and well here in America and around the world. So we're seeing those principalities over cities and regions. For example, whoever would have thought that we would be having a Muslim call to prayer in cities like Detroit, Michigan, or Dearborn, or other
places. Times Square in New York City.
Times Square, exactly. Yeah. So we're seeing this onslaught of what you and I have talked about several times, which is the blue, the green, and the red. And the blue is the global elite, the unelected technocrats that are making decisions, for example, at the WHO, the WEF, the 17 Sustainable Goals at the United Nations, COP28, all of these sorts of things. We're watching this global system come into place, which the Bible talks about. The Bible prophesies that in the last days, this one world system, one world bank, one world economy, one world religion, one world government, one world military will try to expand and raise up its head. And we're watching that happen right before our eyes, especially on the topic that you're intimately involved with now, the WHO, the World Health Organization, as they are trying to attempt to steal the sovereignty of all nations to agree to a one world health system, which takes away our freedoms. So we're watching this spiritual warfare take place. And so we're not fighting against flesh and blood. We're fighting against principalities and dark world systems and powers. In fact,
and the point you've made, if I may interrupt you, sir, to hone in on it. It's not just someplace else. It's truly a global undertaking, and it is manifesting itself increasingly here. And I just wanted to clarify something you said, because it's vital to our understanding of what we're up against. You said, I think they're talking about stealing our sovereignty at the World Health Organization. What's even more shocking, really, is the voluntary surrender of our sovereignty that Joe Biden and his administration here and, others throughout what I would call the Western civilized world are actively, engaged in this abdication, I guess you might say, of sovereignty and the exercise of it. And that, in a way, I have the feeling there's a biblical portent here, but I certainly understand that the temporal one, the one that we're now watching, in terms of our ability to exercise, for among other things, public health decisions. And we've been talking about this throughout the program, Kevin, but I'm just very, very concerned that the larger thrust of what we're up against, and not just Israel, by the way, but us as well, is a principality that is set on the destruction of the United States of America. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a principality that's risen up with the global elites, and they are subject to it. In fact, in the book of Psalms, chapter 2, verse 1 and 2, it says this. It says, "Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain?" It says in verse 2, "The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters." But it says in verse 4, "The one enthroned in heaven laughs, and the Lord scoffs at them. He rebukes them," he says. So what we're seeing is a literally, if I could say this, an anti-Christ system. You know, Christianity was born out of the womb of Judaism, and America has a spiritual umbilical cord tied to Israel that should never be severed. These two nations are the greatest allies in the world together. And so if the world, the principalities of the world know that if they can get rid of America and Israel, which are two nations based on Judeo-Christian principles of the Word of God, then they want to get rid of the Word of God. They want to get rid of any Jewish person. That's what the whole from the river to the sea means. They want to take, they want to annihilate Israel and the Jewish people. This has been going on for some time, and Christians as well.
Let me, I wanted to come to the two other elements of what you said. I think you said the blue, the globalists, the red and the green are what we're up against. Just walk us quickly through that as you see it, through, in particular, your spiritual lens.
Well, the red would represent communism, and we're watching China, and we're watching Russia, and we're watching this new axis of evil with Iran and Syria and all of these other nations that are now conspiring, just as the Bible said they would. In the end times, they would surround those nations, mostly Muslim, are surrounding Israel. Their enemies are surrounding them. But communism is now coming into, I mean, I've never seen anything like it on the streets of America, communism. And then Islam is the third, you know, the green helmet, if you will. So we're fighting the blue, the red, and the green, all of these things. Islam is really an anti-Christ system. It is a political, military, you know, organization. It's a way of life. It's not a religion. It is a all-encompassing ideology of a lifestyle. So we're watching.
Let me just say, Reverend Jessup, I'm sure we will get people who will strongly disagree with that characterization. I think there are people in the Muslim faith who believe that it is very much a faith. But I think what you're getting at, and what we've worked on intensively at our Center for Security Policy over the years, has been the elements of Sharia that make it a political system, that make it, yes, a way of life, but also a way of war, of jihad. And it's those Sharia supremacists in particular that I think are now in this, multi-adversary array or axis, if you will, waging spiritual warfare against Christians and Jews, and doing so, unfortunately, not just someplace else, as we've said, but here at home. And when you look at what's going on here at home, you say you're incredulous at the evidence of the communists in our midst. And I think if you look at, you know, the videos of the demonstrations on behalf of Hamas, it's pretty clear that what you're dealing with is not just, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood, or for that matter, the Iranian, you know, sort of Hezbollah equivalents here. But you're also looking at an alliance with these other forces as well. So this brings me really to the kind of missions that you have set for yourself, both in Israel and in the United States, to raise the alarm about what's going on here and to rally the forces of, Judeo-Christian civilization to resist this spiritual onslaught.
Yeah, I believe that this war we're seeing in Gaza with Hamas is not just Israel's war, it's now our war, because Hamas is a, like I said a moment ago, it's an Islamic military political terrorist organization that has its tentacles now breached into cities not only all across America, but all across the world. So when you look at battling Hamas just in Gaza, let me remind you that we could be playing whack-a-mole with Hamas all over the world, because they are everywhere now. And so
Hamas and these other Iranian, you know, yes, proxies, Hezbollah is certainly in the mix as well. And so just talk for, the time has gotten away from me. We're going to have to come back to you about the work that you're doing in Israel. And I also wanted to just thank you for the work that you have been doing as a member of our Save the Persecuted Christians team. You were its chairman at the founding, or just about the founding, and have remained on the board. We're very, very proud of that work. And we want you to come back and talk more about it at the nearest moment if we can. Pastor, Kevin Jessup of Global Strategic Alliance, thank you for all that you do and for being such a good friend as well as a leader of our movement. Thank you, Pastor. Come back to us soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same. Until then, go forth and multiply.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Western Pacific will get some welcome attention today with the Japanese Prime Minister making an address to a joint session of Congress and summiting with President Biden and their Filipino counterpart. Unfortunately, the needed display of Allied solidarity and resolve in countering the Chinese Communist Party's intensifying aggression throughout the region has just been undercut by Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's latest appeasement tourism in Beijing. That's a seriously fraught message to be sending, even as the CCP's forces are routinely assaulting Philippine vessels and penetrating Japanese airspace and waters, as they are those of a fourth strategically critical but uninvited regional partner, Taiwan. At a time when Team Biden is actively betraying its most important ally in the Mideast, Israel, there is no room for signaling that America is determined to undermine any others by engaging with the CCP. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back, and when I say welcome to our next guest, it is with the utmost enthusiasm. His name is Dr. Bradley Thayer. He is a friend and colleague of ours, a very important member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, and the co-author with another of our great friends, Captain James Fennell, of an important new book about engaging Communist China, America's greatest strategic failure. We are blessed to have his insights into the nature of the Chinese Communist Party, the threat that it poses to us, and what we must do about it, all of which is not only available in this new book, but also his writings, many of them now in partnership with Jim Fennell at American Greatness in a weekly column that they do there. I commend all of it to you. Brad Thayer, welcome back. It's so good to have you, my friend. It's been a while.
Frank, it's great to join you today.
Thank you. You and Jim have been... Well, barnstorming the country, I think it's fair to say, talking about the dangers of this policy of engagement. And as you know, we've had it on display in, you know, a rather spectacularly ugly fashion, I have to say, in the person of Janet Yellen, engaging in her latest kowtow tourism in Beijing. Give us a quick course on what engagement in the hands of people like Joe Biden and Janet Yellen and Tony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and the like in the Biden administration, what it looks like and how really out of kilter it is with what the times require.
Oh, absolutely, Frank. And that's the key issue. Engagement, in essence, is the belief that the United States, through trade and investment, can change the Chinese Communist Party in a way that was or could bring the Chinese Communist Party into a liberal international order, and in some respects, make it democratic even, so that the party is either gradually overthrown or the party is transforms itself. And its roots go back to the Clinton administration in the 1990s. Now, this has been a disaster in every respect. This was the greatest strategic failure that the United States has made ever, because what it did is it took the People's Republic of China from a precarious, tottering political entity where the CCP might have been overthrown in the wake of the fall of the Soviet Union and the collapse of communist governments in Central and Eastern Europe. But instead, it took them from being a less developed country to becoming the power that it is today, where it is remaking international society, international institutions, and is a direct existential threat to the United States. So the engagement school did that. And what Jim Fennell and I call neo-engagement is in full flower. So engagement lasted from Clinton until Trump. Trump, to his great credit, made strong efforts to break that, to change that policy. With Biden, we're seeing a neo-engagement strategy. And the flowering that we saw last year or with Janet Yellen's simply appalling visit to China, to have an individual in her position kowtow, as you said, Frank, is, it's a testament to, again, the fact that the Biden administration is determined to ensure that the CCP does not weaken, does not flag, does not fall from power.
Right. To prop it up, in other words. And Brad, let me just ask you, because kowtow is, of course, a Chinese term for prostrating yourself before the emperor, and it's evidence of the supremacy of the Chinese over all of the barbarians, notably us. But that ancient practice continues in the contemporary neo-engagement school, that's for sure. But I wanted to ask you, just for clarity, Brad Thayer, are you saying that we basically have made possible the Chinese miracle, as it's called? There are a lot of people who impute to the genius of communism and its execution by the Chinese communists that has lifted, you know, a billion people, or many of them at least, out of poverty and set them on the long march, if I can use that expression, towards, a full first world capability in economic terms and certainly military terms. But is it actually we who have underwritten this? We who have sent technology there? We who have trained their personnel and otherwise created this monster?
Hey, Frank, indeed, we did. We did do this. Deng Xiaoping, the greatest strategist of the 20th century, baited the hook, if you will, with his promise of essentially support for manufacturing and investment from New York, as well as more broadly the West. But it was the United States that went. It was Wall Street, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Clinton administration that really established this engagement school of thought on ultimately the American national security community, as well as, of course, our media, our universities, our institutions, philanthropic foundations. We can simply go down the list of how our elite essentially took the bait.
Have been captured.
And indeed, and now we find ourselves where American resources, as you have documented time and again, and in your book, The Indictment, of course, have documented the individuals who are responsible for this, the policies that are responsible for this. And the Biden administration will not change policy. So the Biden administration.
Well, this is the key point. They won't voluntarily change policy. And one of the courses of action that we were recommending in the indictment, as you know, Brad, and you've been very generous both in contributing to the book and helping us talk about it, is this idea that what is going on at the end of the day is betrayal of our country, and that we need to name names and we need to hold accountable the people here, as well as in Beijing and elsewhere in China, that are perpetrating this. And the idea that the administration of Joe Biden, which I believe, as we talked about earlier in the program with Dr. Michael Rechtenwald, is correctly characterized by Sam Faddis as under the auspices of a controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party, namely the President of the United States, makes all of this all the more perilous. We'll be right back with more with my colleague and friend Brad Thayer right after this. Stay tuned. We're back, and we are joined with my heartfelt thanks by my friend Brad Thayer. Dr. Thayer is one of our country's most eminent and authoritative analysts, observers, commentators, and experts on the Chinese Communist Party and the threat that it poses to our country. He partners regularly with another of our great friends and allies in the Committee on the Present Danger, China, Captain James Fennell, United States Navy retired, and they make a very formidable tag team. All I can say, Brad, is I'm glad you guys are on our side, because you are one of our best hopes, and if you were playing for the other team, we'd be certainly doomed. But I wanted to talk to you about if neo-engagement or old-fashioned engagement, whatever one wants to call this practice of aiding and abetting our mortal enemy, to the point where, especially at a moment like this, we really are propping up the regime to the great detriment of the people of China, who have suffered most at their hands, but also to our own. What's the alternative, Brad? What are you and Captain Fennell recommending in your wonderful new book, Engaging Communist China?
Well, thank you, Frank. The alternative is victory. That is the defeat of the Chinese Communist Party, which is where our energy should be and our focus should be. And so a U.S. Treasury Secretary should not be going to the People's Republic of China to work out deals or problems in the relationship, but should be telling the Chinese Communist Party, we're ending the trade relationship, the investment relationship with you. And it's happening yesterday. That would be if we're following a strategy of victory. And Frank, you worked in the Reagan administration, so you knew that Reagan and were instrumental in deal in the Department of Defense in bringing about the strategy of victory, which ultimately led to the defeat of the Soviet Union. And this is what we
need. But it was the conscious purpose of the President of the United States to do that, which is what's in such stark contrast, isn't it?
As he said, Reagan set the strategic objective of defeating the Soviet Union, and he, in declaratory policy, he mobilized and inspired people of goodwill around the world, including in prisons in the Soviet Union, like Sharansky, right? I mean, who was greatly inspired by Reagan's remarks and his famous March 1983 address in Orlando, where he declared the Soviet Communist Party to be the center of evil in the modern world.
The evil empire, indeed. And Brad, let me just say, one of the things that I have really taken such pride in, I guess one might say, is the work that with your outstanding leadership and that of Captain Fennell and so many others that we feature on this program, our Committee on the Present Danger, focused on China, is carrying on, I think, the legacy of a Committee on the Present Danger whose membership included Ronald Reagan and to whom he turned to help him devise the strategy for victory over what he then considered to be, rightly, that time's existential threat to freedom. We're in a similar moment. And again, I just want to say, folks, our Committee on the Present Danger, China, is made possible by a partnership between our Center for Security Policy and our friend Brian Kennedy's American Strategy Group. These are people who are trying to make sure that all of you have access to the wonderful work of, I think among the most eminent people in our country, clear-eyed, thoughtful, intelligent, and on target about the threat we face from the CCP and what we have to do about it. And Brad, I want to encourage people to particularly take advantage of the myriad programs that you have participated in, sponsored by the committee, available for free, all of them, at presentdangerchina.org, as ways in which you can learn more about the ways that the Chinese communists are trying to destroy our country in this unrestricted warfare against us, and who is helping them do it, as well as what we must do about it. That's all available at centerforsecuritypolicy.org, and take action under presentdangerchina.org. So, Brad, I wanted to come back to something that I talked about earlier in the program with Michael Rechtenwald, just to get your take on it, too. He is, as you know, a former Marxist, and he made very clear that the efforts underway at the hands of Joe Biden and his friends, including the CCP, to create global governance using the World Health Organization as the sort of vanguard of the effort, is in fact right out of the CCP communist playbook of global domination. How do you see that, and how important is it that we resist?
Well, I would add my agreement to what he stated. Indeed, it is, and it's a fundamental and classic Leninist strategy that all avenues, the party advances on all avenues, including hijacking institutions that are would be held by bourgeois organizations or groups, or that would be scientific or professionally focused, like the World Health Organization, which has been irredeemably corrupted by the influence of the Chinese Communist Party and has become, in essence, a threat not only to the health, it would be bad enough. In the classic communist tactic, of course, it's the negation of what the name says. So it's not the World Health Organization, right? It's essentially, it is designed now, having been captured by the Chinese communists, to injure, to be a malign force with respect to health. But also, Frank, as you've documented time and again in the events that you're hosting this week, I think are so critically important because it shows that it's the threat to sovereignty. It is the threat to our liberties or freedoms in the West are targeted by the CCP operating through the World Health Organization, which has moved beyond health to become a political weapon in the employment, to serve the needs and intent of the Chinese Communist Party. And that has to end immediately.
It does. Not Now is the name of the Align Act campaign. We encourage you to go to it, centerforsecuritypolicy.org, and of course, sovereigntycoalition.org as well. While you're doing it, please consider supporting all of this work. It's vital that you do. We need that help. And we love the help as well that Brad Thayer. Come back to us again soon, sir, if you would. In the meantime, thank you for this marvelous new book, Engaging Communist China. God bless.
Thank you, Frank. My pleasure.
We'll talk to the rest of you next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.